You can tell whether a man is clever by his answers. You can tell whether a man is wise by his questions. That was a quote by Naguib Mahfouz, and it really sets the groundwork for the conversation you're about to hear with myself and my friend John Berghoff, who is the founder, creator, and CEO of Exchange Approach, and is considered by many to be the godfather of conversational choreography. He has been hired by some of the world's most well-known companies like BMW and Facebook, has worked with CEOs and leaders all across the globe, helping them design powerful questions that unlock transformation within communities at scale. So the reason I wanted to have John on here, I've learned a lot from him in a short amount of time, and the power of asking meaningful, intentional questions has the likely potential and the strong probability of significantly changing the course of your life, the results you achieve in your business, and so much in between. It can even have an impact on how you parent, the relationships that you have. So regardless of whether you have a community or anything like that, you absolutely need to listen to this episode, because the one thing we have in common is that you're a business owner, you're an entrepreneur, or potentially an aspiring to be entrepreneur. And the tools, the resources, the content contained within this podcast episode and the conversation that myself and John have is really, I hope and believe, is going to land home with you. So without further ado, let's hop right into episode 713 here on the Flip Empire Show. Enjoy.
You're listening to Flip Empire, the show committed to helping real estate entrepreneurs who want to build their empire without sacrificing their life. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
My friends, Alex Pardo here. I always say how excited I am to be on the show. And this particular episode is one that I have been looking forward to for a while, because the gentleman I'm about to introduce you to had a pretty deep and profound impact on my life and business in a short amount of time. Now, to give you guys a little bit of context and background and set the stage here, I'm about to introduce you to John Berghoff from the Exchange Approach. And John is somebody who I have probably had less than a handful of conversations with over the last 2-3 months, and yet somebody who I view as a friend and feel like I've known for numerous years. And part of the reason is because John is an expert, in my opinion, at asking powerful questions that unlock transformation, elevate leadership within communities in particular, and he does it at scale. I was introduced to John and his business Exchange through a good friend of mine, Mike Wagner, who many of you probably know because I've had him on the show several times, also somebody who's had a big impact on my life. I reached out to Mike and I said, man, there's a lot of changes going on within our Ascend Mastermind community, and I want to take it to the next level, so to speak. And almost without hesitation, he said, you got to check out the Exchange Approach. And then I started researching it. I actually ended up attending an online workshop that admittedly I almost didn't attend because it was pretty long. It was, I don't know, 3-4 hours, whatever it was. And I never thought in my wildest dreams I could sit through a 3-4 hour Zoom and yet walk out feeling more energized than when I came into it. And so since then, I've been a part of John's community, and he actually was gracious enough to do a coaching call with me not too long ago and really just helped me see opportunities and ways that I could impact more people through our Ascend community, through this podcast. And so I invited him on the podcast because as real estate investors, as entrepreneurs, there's a lot you can learn from John, just in how he thinks, the way he phrases and asks certain questions, and the way that you can elevate your leadership within your company or within your community. So with that being said, John, man, it's an honor to have you on the show, brother.
Alex, I really appreciate it. Thanks for the kind intro. And I had forgotten that it was Mike that introduced us. So it brought a smile to my face. Mike is a great man and I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, awesome. Well, here's what I want to kind of start the show with. Personal development has been a big part of my life for over a decade at this point. And I remember one of the things I've learned from Tony Robbins throughout the years that always stuck with me for whatever reason is he says, the quality of your life can be dramatically changed by the quality of questions you ask. And I think we live in a day and time where answers are abundant. Some are good, some are bad, especially with the advent of AI and ChatGPT and Google and all these resources we have at our fingertips. So answers are out there, but I find that a lot of people are not quite sure how to ask meaningful questions. And so when I think of you, I think that's one of the areas you're an expert in and you excel in, because I've experienced it firsthand. How can people listening or watching this online at some point start to learn how to ask better questions that create the impact and change that they're after?
Well, you're well aware how much I appreciate what you're asking, Alex. And I have to tell you, when you mentioned going to a Tony Robbins conference, my first Anthony Robbins conference I attended in 1999. He wore a tie back then, just to give you an idea.
A lot younger too.
Yeah. And you know, it's wild. I was 17 at that time. And I invested at that time, and I was kind of like failing out of high school. It's a longer story. But I was very fortunate to be invited to try out some entrepreneurial opportunities. And I ended up hiring a sales coach for $500 a month as a 17-year-old. And
wow,
a lot of what he taught me back then was the power of the questions that we ask. And yeah, like you said, my passion in our work's passion is in trying to figure out how do we unlock the human potential that exists every time two or more people come together. And one of the elements of the formula that we've kind of developed over the years is it often begins with the questions that we ask and then the conversations we have. And you know, where that's led us to is being a leader of leaders. Global leadership conferences are kind of a place that we regularly get to go in and facilitate interactions where we turn the audience into the stage, the learners into the teachers, and we honor the wisdom in the room. And you've been through our trainings. And as you pointed out, a lot of what we stand for is the idea that it's great to have a lot of wisdom and knowledge. We live at a time right now where it can be even more powerful to not just want or need to be the, as some people say, the sage on the stage, but what happens when we learn to become the guide on the side? Ana Liotta, the outgoing president of the National Speakers Association, former president. That was what she said when she attended our training at the beginning of the pandemic. She said, oh my gosh, if we can learn to bring groups together like this, like magical things become possible. And questions are at the heart of it, Alex. And you asked, how can they leverage the power of questions or curiosity? And here's a couple thoughts on that. One of them is to give reverence or respect to what happens when we ask a new question.
Mm.
And I'll give you an example. Right now I'm wearing contact lenses. And anybody who's ever put a prescription lens in front of their eyes can follow. And even if they haven't, they'll understand the metaphor I'm about to use. A question is like a lens that we put in front of our mind. And the interesting thing about a lens is if I put a lens in front of my eyes, even before I open my eyes, that lens is going to determine the world that I see. Questions are the same way. They change our future even before the answers arrive. I'll give you a specific example, and this even reveals a great example of a valuable question. So next month, I'll be getting on a plane. I only travel, I think you know this, a few times a year. This right. will be my third time, last time this year, because I, by choice, I enjoy being home with my family these days. But I'm getting on a plane because it's a room full of CEOs for an organization called Conscious Capitalism, and they believe in business as a way of elevating humanity. So it's a very meaningful room to get to facilitate. And I'll tell you, of the three-day conference that we have the privilege of designing and facilitating, all throughout, we'll be presenting different questions to this room of CEOs for them to learn from each other and to learn from the wisdom that emerges from within. The very first question in the first few minutes of the conference, we're going to invite the whole room to contemplate, why is it important that you're actually in this room?
Right.
And that question can sound embarrassingly obvious or overly simple, and maybe it is, but it's just an example where instead of somebody standing on the stage telling everybody why it's important, something different happens when we invite people to pause and to listen to what arises from within. So you'd asked, Alex, how can people be better with the power of questions? One is just give respect to how meaningful they are. And then we can talk about what are the types of questions we could ask. But the other thing is just this, and I have to tell you this, this just happened on Friday. Today's a Tuesday. I had the most fulfilling experience I've had in a long time. I was invited to go in and teach in my fourth grade son's class. I got 30 minutes. They called it the visiting professor. And I haven't been so nervous in a long time.
By the way, for people listening, John is somebody who has spoken on stage to hundreds, possibly thousands of people at any given time. I don't know. And he's been in front of some of the most successful people on the planet. And so to hear you, John, say, hey, I was nervous to speak to these fourth graders is pretty awesome.
I was so nervous. I was so nervous. But I got to tell you just one thing about working with these fourth graders that has everything to do with leveraging the power of curiosity. So the first thing I do is I have slides that never have more than like a word on it. The first slide says entrepreneur. I'm an entrepreneur. Who knows what an entrepreneur is? Now, here's where I started getting just, I was in awe, Alex. Who knows what an entrepreneur is? They all raise their hands. Who wants to say what it is? They all keep their hands up, right? And then the whole presentation just continues. And then I say, okay, I help leaders to be better leaders, right? I had to find a way to explain it. What's a leader? They all raise their hands. They all have an, and they had beautiful answers. The first young man I called on, he said, a leader is someone who's humble. I said, my goodness, you're in fourth grade. Man. Anyways, what is it that these fourth graders had that many of us lose as we get older? They had an insatiable curiosity.
That's right.
And when it got to the Q&A time, they were so willing to ask questions. And I think we all just have to remember that if we can recapture a childlike curiosity, curiosity is the antidote. It's the precursor to so many problems in our world where there's conflict and tension and distrust and toxicity. Can we just get curious about each other? It's a good starting point, at least.
Absolutely. And there's quite a few things to unpack there, at least that are bouncing around in my head. You know, I think life beats a lot of people down. In my humble opinion, it starts to zap them from their curiosity. And it's been said to me by a mentor years ago that our children can be our greatest teachers if we allow them to. Mm. And how that resonates for me is asking myself, where can I be more curious and act as if I was my 6 or my 8 year old, right? Like those fourth graders that are anxiously raising their hands to want to learn more. I think one of the takeaways early on from this podcast, at least for me, again, selfishly, is I need to allow myself to be more curious without placing any type of judgment on how I might look, sound, or whatever, right? Because there's so many insecurities. And I think if we're honest with each other, we've probably all dealt with some version of insecurity. And so I appreciate you sharing that. I think the other thing that comes up for me is there might be people listening to this that maybe don't lead a community, right? Or don't speak on stage, but they're business owners. And so whether they have one person on their team or they have 20 people on their team, how can entrepreneurs listening to the show start to take a lot of what you teach? And maybe this is a perfect opportunity to get into the types of questions that they can ask their team members, their employees, to not just get the most out of the business, right? So that their team members can grow. Because you and I share a lot of things in common. And one of those is that we want to see people grow and succeed.
Yeah.
And as an entrepreneur, I think it's our duty to make sure that we're lifting our team members up and allow them to grow.
Yeah. Well, I love what you're asking, Alex. And I love something that you said, and that is you don't have to lead a community to be interested in creating the experience of community every time you interact with another human being. So it could be helpful to actually just take this word community for a moment and define it for just a second, because it's really easy to think, oh, community is someone that wants to start or grow or scale a business based on a bunch of people, whether it's a mastermind group or bringing customers together, hosting events. That's all true, but there's something more essential, something more human. And as I've gotten to know you, I can only imagine you've got the type of listener that probably cares about this. And you know, community, and we can dissect it and talk about what we've learned. We lead our own. We've led many leaders who lead other communities, literally in 41 countries. Like, we've stumbled into a lot of learnings about community. Here's the most essential, and every one of us should care about this. When we go home at night, we interact with our kids or our neighbors or our friends. And that is, every single one of us is asking some version of a question. There's a scientific reason why, right? If you talk to a neuroscientist or a biologist, they'll all tell you, yeah, there's a reason why we all ask this question. You said something earlier, Alex, too, that we live at a time where, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember exactly how you said it, that the world can kind of beat us down right now.
Yeah.
And let's actually be really open about this. We are living at a time where, and I can say this actually from a data-driven standpoint, you know, if someone's listening, they're an entrepreneur, you respect coming from a place where you have quality data to make sense of things, right? Now, a lot of folks don't need the data and they can just look around and see that we're living at a time where the world seems to be changing, maybe in ways that are faster than many of us feel equipped to deal with that change.
Sure.
And if you peel that onion one layer further, what's the consequence of that? The consequence is significant. I have asked a particular question to thousands of leaders in the last year. How would you describe this moment in time that we're living in right now in one word? And I will tell you 4 or 5 of the most common answers. Conflict, crisis, chaos, division. These are the types of answers. And once in a while, people say opportunity. right? Excitement.
Disconnected came up for me, for whatever it's worth.
Disconnected, yeah. Technologically, look at you and I right now. We've never been more connected.
Right.
But there's real hard data from the whole field of mental health that will actually validate that people have never felt more disconnected personally, interpersonally, even spiritually, psychologically. So what does that have to do with where this conversation started? I'm going to point something out. You said we live at a time where the world beats people down. It's actually true. And it might be more true now than it has been in our whole lifetime. And so what does that have to do with community and belonging and being a good leader for my two employees or the one customer I'm going to interact with today? Well, we have to realize we're living in a time where people are experiencing more stress, more self-doubt, more inner conflict than they ever have on a global scale. Doesn't mean everybody is, but in general, that's a fundamental truth right now. So that being said, what do we need to understand about community if we really care about being the best leader, husband, parent, neighbor? Well, every one of us is asking some version of this question. Can I be who I am and still fit in? My children are asking that when I interact with them. My employees are asking that when I interact with them. That my friend who I have coffee with is asking that when I interact with him. So can I be who I am and still fit in? And which is a fundamental question that has to do with belonging.
That's right.
So I don't have to have a community, but what I should be concerned about is how do people feel right now in their relationship with me, in their relationship with this company? Because when they don't feel like they belong, when they don't feel respected or like they've been treated with dignity or like they're at a place where they can use their strengths or like the things they care about can actually be elevated by whatever this entrepreneur, founder or business cares about, they end up disappearing, right?
Yeah.
So you'd ask about community. What does that have to do with leaders? We live at a time right now where more of us are living from a place of fear and scarcity and doubt. And that actually accelerates people feeling separated from each other. So leaders need to care.
Yeah,
they need to be creative and solve problems, but they need to be generous and more than anything, kind.
Oh, you're preaching, man. You're speaking my language. That right there, what you just said was a big motivator for me as far as wanting to get you on the show, because as the host of this show, I think it's my obligation to give people a platform that they probably don't need, but to elevate them, particularly when they're pro-connection, pro-community, right? Because I think about when you ask that question, I think the world today we live in, we're too disconnected. Even when you think about competition, I much prefer to look at it as collaboration amongst businesses or people or whatever the case might be. And so I had alluded to early on in the show, John, that you and I have had 3 or 4 conversations in the last 2-3 months, and yet I feel like I've known you for years. Right. And that's because of your ability to communicate, to connect, to ask the right types of questions. And I'm like, this is a skill that not only I want to grow in, but people listening, again, regardless of whether they have communities or not, I think you just articulated that a community could be a one-on-one dialogue or conversation with somebody. And if you look at it through that lens, I think it could be very profound and powerful for people listening to this. I want to transition. You had said the different types of questions. When I went through your training, I think the first one, and correct me if I'm wrong, is a purpose question that connects people. Can you kind of just share, go through the different types of questions and maybe an example or two of how real estate investors or entrepreneurs listening to the show might be able to apply that to their lives and or businesses?
Yeah, absolutely. They all apply and happy to. So, you know, the very first one we just touched on a few minutes ago is, yes, what we call a purpose question. And there's different ways to design each of these 4 categories of questions that I can unpack. But the essence of a purpose question is anytime we invite others or ourselves to contemplate why anything is important. The interesting thing about that question before we move on to any other is I've probably, and we track this loosely, we're formalizing this tracking a little bit later this year, but I've facilitated several million conversations where I'm literally live in the room. Now that can be online too, but several million conversations where the room is answering this question, why are we here? And one of the most profound learnings for me around purpose is that a lot of people talk about purpose these days, and for good reason. We want work that's meaningful and purposeful, talking about how do we find a higher, deeper purpose for our business or for ourselves personally? It's a big conversation, right?
Sure.
What I have noticed is that the way that people talk about purpose, I think sometimes with great intention, it is unintentionally actually doing more harm than good. And I'd like to just explain that. Please. We've had a number of students who've written books. I've got some of them behind me about purpose. I had one student who told me about a workshop that they were leading because they came through our training to learn how to redesign their workshop to amplify the kind of experiential learning and connection and experience of community, right? It's what we do. And I said, all right, tell me about your opening exercise. And they said, well, the first thing we do is we ask people, what is your purpose? And I said, okay, interesting. And what kind of responses do you get? And they said, well, sometimes people have an answer. Often they don't. And then we try and help them find it. And I said, okay, that's one way to approach purpose. Like it's a noun. The thing I've noticed, Alex, is that there's a whole alternative way to think about purpose. It's not some noun, something we find under a rock or that hits us from divine epiphany at the end of 40 days of meditating. By the way, all those things can happen.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not dismissing that happening. I like to think it's far healthier to think of purpose as something that we can architect, we can craft, we can design at any given moment, right? Many of your listeners have heard the bricklayer story. Right? I'm walking with my daughter down the center of our town here in Hudson, Ohio, and we come upon three bricklayers and we ask them all the same question. Why is it important that you're here? And they give three completely different answers. First one says, I got to pay the bills. Nothing wrong with that. Second one says, I'm here because this is how I apply my strengths to a career path, right? Third one says, I'm here because we're building a concert hall. One day, musicians I'll never even know of will play music I'll never hear and it'll change lives of people I'll never meet. Same work, right? So there right there reveals a big myth about purpose. It really doesn't have to do with what we do, right? Given the same question, but completely different answer. And it reveals another lesson. And that is we can create or craft or design meaning around any given moment, situation, opportunity, challenge. So that's just a lesson I wanted to share purpose can be something we can attribute at any moment and we can change our answer the next moment. Right. In fact, you mentioned, we were talking about this earlier. This is a difficult time in our world for many. We can ask a question. Well, how is what's happening to me, maybe not happening to me, but happening for me?
For me.
Right. And one of my teachers once taught me, there's another variation of that, which is, how is it that maybe whatever I'm navigating right now is a part of my evolutionary purpose? Which is another way of just saying, this is what I'm supposed to be dealing with. These are just different flavors of playing with a purpose question. But
yeah,
if I can make a comment about a couple other question types.
Please.
I'll give you an example. Let's look at it this way. Our framework is all about how do we ask questions that look back, that look ahead, and also bring us into the present in powerful ways. Let's talk about how we frame any question, Alex, for just a second here. I want to give a really practical example.
Okay.
Of how questions are great. There's research that says if we can be curious, we're going to be better leaders, better entrepreneurs, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also a whole body of work. And my experience has shown me certain types of questions will get us a lot further, a lot faster. Let me give you one example. It is very easy for us when we go to work or we go home for our conversations to get pulled in the direction of what's broken, what's wrong, what's missing, what's not working, whose fault it is. This is what's called a problem solving or deficit based lens.
So true.
By the way, we're wired to be really good at seeing what's not working because that part of our biology kept us alive, but it's actually not the most effective way to actually solve the very problem that we're distracted by.
And if I'm being honest, by the way, I'm guilty of that because I'm more aware of it now more than ever. So
well, me too. And the example I'm going to give you is just going to call myself forward, right? So I want to invoke one of the greatest teachers of leadership. He's actually written more about management leadership than anybody in history, Peter Drucker. And one of my mentors spent a day with Peter before Peter passed away. And at the end of the day, a mentor of mine had a chance to ask Peter this question. He said, Peter, you've written more about management and leadership than anybody in history. In a nutshell, what's the essence of leadership? And with no hesitation, Peter said, easy. I believe what it's always been is actually pretty simple. The job of a leader is to leverage, to elevate, to align the strengths of any system so much so that we make the weaknesses irrelevant. Oof. Now, let me just simplify that quote for a second. What Peter was saying is, let's focus on strengths. Let's focus on what has worked, what is working, where we want to go, as opposed to piling onto the table what hasn't worked, what isn't working, and what we're concerned about happening. And here's the fascinating thing. Peter said that many years ago. Your listeners, I'm certain 80% of them have taken one of two assessments to figure out their strengths. And the reason why 30 million professionals have in the last two decades, it's because hundreds of peer-reviewed studies, Alex, have validated that if we ask questions that bring out or bring us into our strengths, we're so much better at whatever it is we're trying to do.
Yeah.
So I just want to advocate for not all questions of equal value. We want questions that bring out strengths. Here's an example. There's an airline years ago that wanted to solve a problem. So let's make this about solving real problems, right?
Okay.
Because every entrepreneur, every business owner, well, every human can relate to this. Airline wanted to solve a problem. And the problem they wanted to solve was they said, we want to fix our lost baggage problem. Now, that's a fair problem to want to solve, right? If you're an airline, totally yep. fair, right? However, they realized that if the first question they asked is, how do we fix our lost baggage problem? Because they'd been trained on the art and the science of question design by a group of consultants. They realized, wait a minute, that might not actually be the smartest way to solve the lost baggage problem. What does that mean? How's that possible? Well, what they realized is that when we have the limited time to ask a better question, the right question, the most powerful question in our workplaces, at home, in these conversations where we only have minutes or one chance to pick the right question, there's another option. Instead of asking, how do we solve the lost baggage problem, which is like putting a lens in front of our eyes that invites us to get really smart about the problem,
mm-hmm.
they realize we could ask a different type of question, a possibility question, an abundance question. And the question they asked instead, this is a true story, it's a real airline that still exists today. They asked a question that in the new question was, how do we create an exceptional arrival experience? And anyone who's listening can probably already piece a few things together, right? And it's a true story. I'll tell you how it turned out. But what do you think? Do you think they solved some of their lost baggage problems? They did. But guess what else they did? They won all these industry awards for designing innovations for the customer experience. And that's an example of, if we get fixated on fixing what's broken, right? Excellence is not always the opposite of let's fix what's broken. That often just gets us to neutral. No, we got to learn how to ask, what do we really want? In this case, yeah. an exceptional arrival experience. And then every other question we ask can go from there.
Gosh,
so the first questions we ask are so important. Let me give another example if I can.
Please, yeah.
Well, let me actually just take the story I just told and make it personal. So, and this is where I call myself out here. It's sometimes it's easier to talk about it than it is to do, right? So my daughter, Sierra, one of my five kiddos, she's 12. And this was two semesters ago, brings her report card home. It's got a handful of A's, a couple of B's. There may have been a C. And I look at it and I'm sitting there thinking, okay, John, you've only got a couple minutes here because we're about to go to soccer practice. What conversation are you going to have, right? And anybody listening knows what I'm thinking in that moment I should ask, right? And I'm literally saying to myself, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it, right? And every one of us, we can all relate to a moment where we do the very thing that we shouldn't do, right? Because we become unconscious for whatever reason. And what do I ask her? I say, Sierra, how'd you get the C? Or tell me about the C. And if anyone's curious, here's how that whole conversation went. It didn't last very long. I think she made a sound and then walked away.
She shut down.
Yeah. And what I know from my life's work, Alex, is I should have asked her, tell me about getting the A. And everyone listening to this knows that she would have been way more motivated to talk about that. And then if I would have said, and she would have stayed in the conversation. And then yeah. I could have said, how does it feel? And what could you learn from that? And even if we never even talked about the C, I know for a fact, if I would have just focused on the A's, better chance of elevating the B's and the C. So just an example, Alex, that just even our philosophy around the types of questions we ask, so important, right?
I want to kind of pause here because one of the questions that came to mind for me was, if you have a particular process, routine, framework, or environment, it could be a number of things that you go through to get creative to unlock more powerful questions. Like, so I think of the example of the airline, right? Like, it was a much more profound and powerful question, the latter one that you posed. And as a result, they won all these awards. And of course, they solved the very small challenge they were trying to solve initially. Whereas had they just tried to answer that first question, they may or may not have solved the baggage problem, but they probably certainly would not have won these awards.
That's right.
The motivation behind this question is, you and I were on a call on Zoom, I don't know, a week and a half ago or so. And I remember you mentioned something that kind of piqued my curiosity. You were talking about just some cool things happening in your company and how you were planning or prepping or designing that experience. And I think you were out in the wilderness. So I'm curious what that unlocked for me is, are there any best practices that you have found for you that maybe others can leverage, or it spurns an idea to start to unlock the creativity that's going to lead to better questions?
Yeah. So there's a few things that you're asking that are certainly meaningful and important for me and for our work. I think there's a disclaimer that I have to give first. So yes, we can talk about how do we tap into a deeper place of creativity? How do we override our unconscious reactivity or the things that hold us back? We can talk about that. And being in the woods is one answer for me. Leveraging the wisdom of Mother Nature, because we are Mother Nature and we have that wisdom within. So we can talk about that. And yeah, we can talk about question types. And I'd love to come back to that in a second here. But the disclaimer is it takes training. I mean, I've been at this for over a decade and I'm going to unpack like two or three more question examples. We'll stay on that airline example, okay, right? So that people can get, okay, like here's a real practical tool set. And by design, everything I unpack should sound so simple, right? Because one of the keys to great question design is the accessibility of the questions. But your question is, how do you decide what types of questions to ask?
And exactly,
it does take a lot of training. You've sat through three whole days. Yeah. We've had 2,500 people spend 3 days with us. And many of those people spend years with us because there's a lot of nuance to learning when the right question makes sense. But let's address a few pieces of your question.
Okay.
So one of them is, and I'm going to start in kind of the deeper dimension, and then we'll come back to like the practical tactical. I hope that's okay. Often people, they think they want the practical tactical, but without the deeper acknowledgement of what's happening under the surface, I think the techniques don't really work.
Makes sense.
So at the top of this conversation, I shared that giving reverence and respect to the power of curiosity is really important. And the grand question of all questions is, what question it makes the most sense right now, right? Here's the interesting thing. When we're designing what types of questions to bring into different conversations, to different meetings, different gatherings, whatever the purpose is, the first thing that we are really thinking about, if we're present to what matters most, is, are we ourselves as curious as we want to invite others to be? Because if bringing a question into your next conversation feels like an assignment in school, it can actually be a turnoff. But if it feels like, not like I'm assigning it to you, but I'm exploring it with you, that's a genuine invitation. So there's really some inner work, some soul searching, where if I want to bring a powerful question into a conversation, I have to be equally willing, ready, and capable to be genuinely curious.
Yeah.
And anyone listening could take that and say, come on, man, teach me the question types. I'm curious. Well, here's the thing. It's so easy to say we're genuinely curious, but guess what happens as soon as there's just a sliver, just a spark of tension between two people or between me and a group of people, and I get triggered or somebody else being triggers me, I instantly lose curiosity, right? And so we went to teach this to a group of German engineers about 4 years ago. We got flown out to Munich to train the autonomous driving division for BMW. Let me just confess, boy, was I intimidated. Okay. And there's a funny side story, Alex. I was so insecure. I'm like this guy in Ohio, and this is BMW. I'm supposed to train the head of all the autonomous driving division how to ask better questions to tap into their intelligence as they're creating the future of transportation. Literally, that's kind of what they work on, right? So I'm already so intimidated by this and just insecure, like, who am I? And the worst part is the week before I get on the plane, I was wrestling with one of my kids. I got poked in the eye. Long story longer, I had to wear a patch the entire
time. Oh, trip. You're kidding.
So I'm already totally insecure to be the guy from the US walking around the building, like wanting to shrink. And now I've got a patch on my face. It's another story that clearly I was happy to revisit. But at the end of the trip, I asked him, I said, I was having dinner with the guy who brought me out in his home with his family. It was really cool. And I said, hey, why did you bring this training in? And he said, John, it's so simple. He said, because we deal in such complex, high pressure, high stakes situations, we are well aware that as soon as we get stressed, we lose touch with that curiosity, because now we want to defend our perspective. We want to control the conversation.
Yeah.
Right. These are what we do as human beings in conflict, right? This is a great lesson on what do you do when you're in the middle of a conflict with another person, a great conversational tactical training that has everything to do with this. just remember, the faster either one of us can get back to a place of genuine curiosity about the other person, we have a chance to turn a downward spiral into an upward spiral. The faster one of us, even inside of our head, says, what can I learn about Alex right now? Mm-hmm. What can I learn about his perspective? Can I stop seeing my perspective as the only version of truth? Can I be open to where he's coming from? And I ask him that in a way where he feels my openness.
Yeah.
Because we talked about belonging at the beginning of this call. There's a whole body of work on how people feel psychologically safe. And if anyone's hearing that phrase, if you're not aware, it's probably the most important thing to want to be a student of if you want to be a great leader, especially navigating conflict. How do you help other people to feel safe? That's key to people feeling like they can be themselves, they can take risks and still be a part of my team, right? Well, one of the keys to you feeling safe around me is my vulnerability. And in particular, my willingness to be open, my willingness to reveal that I'm open to even changing my perspective because of something that you're saying.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the old school of management leadership is you're supposed to know everything, right? No, the opposite is true. I actually become more influential if I allow myself to reveal that I'm open to changing my perspective because of something that you said. So this all started with, hey, John, how do you guys approach question design? And what I just wanted to convey, Alex, is once again, we have to give reverence and respect to the power of curiosity living into all these different interactions.
Yeah.
I'll finish with the practical if you'd like, but please, I'll stop for a second.
That'd be great. No, I just wanted to acknowledge what a powerful shift in the way you view a conversation, an interaction, the way you think about a question. I'm just kind of, a lot of thoughts are bouncing through my head right now. And so just in real time, I'm trying to kind of process this, but the quality of the conversation, the questions, which are going to lead to relationships, and you and I are both relationship driven. We want to elevate, connect people, is completely different if you view it through the lens of what you just shared. So I just wanted to really underscore that point and encourage people to listen to this episode again, or at the very least, rewind the last 5-6 minutes and listen to that again, because it has the potential and the power to really shift so many things, not just in your business, but in your life. I mean, a lot of what I've become more aware of as a result of you and the training is things I'm even aware of as I interact with my children and my girls.
I love that.
Anyways, I just wanted to share that. But yeah, the other types of questions I think you're about to transition into.
Yeah. And keep in mind, Alex, when you shared what you did just now, my feeling is whoever's listening to this is somebody who you don't just want to attract and retain good people at work. You want people to love working with you and your family. You want them to love being in your family. They might not think they can leave, but you want them to want to stay, right? Yes. There's a interesting conversation, Alex, that I hear a lot of these days, especially amongst CEOs, and that is, how do we keep really good people, right? This war for talent, I hear that phrase used, right? And there's a saying that people don't leave companies, they leave managers. And I understand that saying, right? They don't leave companies, they leave people. Mm-hmm. And obviously what's presumed in that is I leave because my manager, I don't like him, or I don't want to be around him or her anymore, right? But I'd actually go a step further, Alex, just to drive home the importance of every conversation. People don't leave companies. They don't leave people. They leave that moment where they made a mistake in the way the manager responded that was less than humane. They said to themselves, I'm out of here, right? They leave a moment where someone isn't willing to admit that they're wrong. And now they don't feel like they're in a workplace where we can just be who we are and try and do good work together, right? And so the other side of that is, if I am that leader that really wants people to want to be around here, how do I respond when others make mistakes?
Yeah.
How do I respond when I make mistakes? How do I respond in the face of adversity? Right? Because I can unconsciously reactively say certain things, or I can more consciously ask questions like, hey, what can we learn? Or I can ask in private, how did I contribute to this? And then I can reveal that to others.
Yeah.
Right? I would encourage everybody to consider that conflict, and I'm going to quote a teacher of mine, Meg Wheatley, taught me this many years ago. Conflict is what happens when good people come together to do important work and they forget to pay attention to the relationship between each other, right? So we got to remember just to pay attention to the relationship. Okay, now the airline, they say, we want to create an exceptional arrival experience. They got this big problem they need to solve. So if you hired our company and we're designing some sort of intervention, which is going to be based in questions, here's the next question we're going to ask. When have we created exceptional arrival experiences in the past? not because we think we've done it every time,
yeah,
but every business, every team, every living system, we can put whatever lens we want on our history. Ben Hardy is a good friend and gives us the privilege to lead all of his in-person events. We've worked with Ben for many years. He taught me many years ago that our past can either be a liability or an asset.
That's right.
And the only thing that changes which one it is which question we ask, right? And so if we ask, well, what can we learn from when we have created exceptional arrival experiences? That's called a question that studies peak experiences from our past, right? We can also ask, what is working really well right now? Here's an interesting question. Most of the time we have a problem, or as an entrepreneur, we realize we need to pivot, we need to solve something. And we're immediately rushing towards, well, what do we need to do differently? And of course, there's a need for those conversations. But before we ask that, what about this question? No matter how we change or evolve, what got us here that we might want to honor, protect, or preserve, right? What is it about who we've been and how we got here that we might want to continue as we imagine what ought to change? That question serves a really important strategic purpose for a lot of teams and organizations.
For sure.
You'd asked at the outset of this call, Alex, your company's story at the beginning of the pandemic. Well, when we're under pressure, our biology says, what do? We got to put out fires. We got to solve a problem. And that's understandable. But as soon as we can slow our breathing down, reset our nervous system and our brains, there's a different question we need to learn to ask, which is not, what are we going to do? We want to get to that. But for us as a company, once we were able to slow down, take a deep breath, at the start of the pandemic, when we thought we're entirely out of business, we said, no, wait a minute, who do we need to be right now?
Yeah.
And then we took that question two directions. Who do we need to be both within ourselves? We need to be creative. We need to be flexible. We need to be willing to let go of what we used to do, right? All these things, some of them are obvious. But who do we need to be for our customers also? And we realized, shit, we need to be generous. We need to be compassionate. We need to be understanding and maybe creative in how we work with them too.
Right.
So we had our whole customer base was up for renewal because we just started our membership the year before. 100% of our customers were up for renewal April 2020.
Oh, a month after.
Yeah. And they're all supposed to renew for a business where everything we'd ever done was in person. And so we looked at each other. We're like, we're about to run out of cash. This is not going to work. And we did the exact opposite of what so many consultants had told us to do. And we went to our customers, Alex, and we said, hey, for the next 30 days or however long we need to, if you want to stay as a member, just pay whatever you can. And we ran all sorts of financial models and we're like, there's a chance that this sounds nice, but we're not going to be able to stay around. And some people paid less. Some people paid the same amount. Some didn't renew. Mm-hmm. We had people, Alex, who paid more than the membership just to help others out. It's just a good lesson that asking who do we need to be is always the most important first question before where are we going to go and what do we need to do to get there? I'll stop and hopefully this has been helpful.
So good. Honestly, I'm so grateful to be in a position where I can host a show and connect with people like you because I'm always learning. I'm listening. I'm part of the audience. And yes, I get the chance to ask questions, but I get to sit and learn as well. And I have found this to be a masterclass in how to ask more powerful questions and one that, you know, this might surprise you, John. This is episode 700 and, I don't know, 14, 15. I forget the number.
Hey, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you so much. Awesome. The only reason I share that is it's not to pat myself on the back at all. If you knew me, it'd be the complete opposite. But it's more that I still, to this day, find it strange to listen to myself. And so as a result, I haven't listened to that very many episodes back.
I can understand that.
This is one that I will watch back and I'll listen to. Maybe I'll fast forward through some of the questions I asked so I can just listen to you. I really want to just encourage people, and not in any type of promotional way, but I want to encourage people to listen to this show and share it even with your team members. Because if we all ask better questions, if we look at opportunities and different conversations we have through the lens that John articulated, it's much more meaningful. It's much more impactful in whatever it is you're striving to accomplish. So, John, brother, I so appreciate you, man. I want to get you out of here on this last question. And you've probably been asked this in the past, but I'm always curious. So I'm going to ask it anyway. You're a young guy, but rewind the clock to maybe 15, 20 years. What do you wish you knew then that you know now based on the experiences that you've had in your entrepreneurial journey?
Goodness, I love that question. It's not a question I've thought about lately. I think if I could speak to my 21-year-old self, first, it's hard not to laugh when I think of what that person was doing. I think I would say a few things. I think I would say, first and foremost, everything is going to be okay. And then I think the second thing I would share is, as a young entrepreneur, it's really easy to think this matters or that matters. But the only thing that really matters in my 41-year-old version of myself, in 20 years, we can ask this again and see if I still believe it, is our relationships with the people around us and with ourselves. The degree to which we bring generosity and kindness and understanding and patience and love and curiosity within ourselves and within our relationships, it's the key that unlocks all the doors that will matter. So
I love it, man. I love it. Well, I want to continue to champion your efforts. So I'll put a couple things on the screen, but John, people that are interested in connecting with somebody in your team, learning more about how you guys teach what it is you teach, where can they connect with you, your team, and find out more about what you have going on?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you asking. And we have a 3-day flagship training, which you were talking about at the beginning of our conversation, that we've had about 2,000 or maybe 2,500, I keep losing track, folks come through this training in the last just couple years. We've been running it every 90 days. I don't know that we'll keep doing it that way. Next year, we're experimenting with some different ideas. But for now, we have a 3-day training. It's called the Online Exchange Experience, OXE for short. And it's how we teach experientially how to design and facilitate transformational learning experiences. Probably the easiest place to find or meet me, you can find me on LinkedIn, connect. If you listen to this and you liked it, shoot me a note on LinkedIn. But there's a workshop that I host on about every month. It's not every month, but it's pretty close. And it's live. And if someone's listened this far into the conversation, Alex, I would love to meet them. I'd love to meet you. Say hi. I'd love to get to know you. And I host these live experiential workshops where we introduce our work experientially online. And the URL is xchangeapproach.com/unlockpotential. Letter X, wordchangeapproach.com/unlockpotential. So that's it. Thanks for letting me share that.
Yeah, no, absolutely, John. Again, thank you for taking the time. And if you guys have any questions or want to connect with me, I think one of the reasons John and I connect so well is because we value relationships. And so that goes beyond this conversation, but that goes to you. The reason I do this show is to help you however I can. And hopefully you've taken one or several nuggets from this particular interview and you can apply it to your life and business, because I truly believe it can have just a deep, meaningful, and profound impact on the way you live and how you operate your business. And if that helps you, then it's going to help others. So with that being said, thank you so much for investing your time and energy. Make sure you're subscribed so that you get notified every Monday. And hopefully you guys are tuning in for episode 1400 years down the road. So John, brother, I appreciate you. And don't think I'm going to forget that when you're 61, you're coming back on the show. Okay. But we'll talk about that down the road.
I love it. Alex, thank you. Thank you. All right, my friend. Appreciate it.
Have a great one, guys. Take care.
One last thing before you go. If you have been listening to the show for a while and or you have been getting value from the show, I would be 100% honored if you would share this show with a friend, or maybe share it with somebody that you think could benefit from this. It's my mission, it's my cause, it's my purpose through Flip Empire to impact and touch people's lives and in their businesses. So it would be an honor if you would be willing to share this episode. And one last thing, make sure that you're subscribed so that you get notified every Monday and Thursday when shows get released. I look forward to connecting with you on the next one. Until then, have a great day.